Get Talent Podcast.
Right, we got a great one. This is going to be a good topic, I think.
Yeah, something that we love talking about, right?
I'm excited about this one. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. I am your host, Ben Cross, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danny Herskowitz. Hey, Danny, how's it going?
Yeah, good today. Going well. How about
you? Yeah, it's good. It's a good day today. Mm. It's a good day today, and sometimes I got to remind myself.
Yeah.
It's a good day. You know, I think it's on us sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Make sure we remind ourselves it's a good day. But yeah, today we got a special topic going on. What are we talking about today, Danny?
We're talking about hiring for coachability.
Coachability. What in tarnation is coachability, Danny?
Yeah. So it's, I think, a word that we've been seeing a lot. It's one of those buzzwords, you know, one of those HR hiring buzzwords. There's a lot of those that we come across. But this one, I think, is actually a really good one. So there was an article in Forbes in 2020, and they said that
Steve Forbes and Forbes magazine, sponsor the show.
Exactly, one day. And he said that he defined coachability as the combination of mindsets and behaviors for continuously integrating feedback to drive growth and change within ourselves. And they say that a coachable person will consistently apply feedback and advice with focus and bravery, and maintains the mental and emotional openness to consistently observe its impact and constantly adapt and make both small and big changes. It's a lot.
That definition brings tear to my eye. I tell you what, I'm getting emotional. I'm emotionally open right now just listening to this. You mentioned a few words in this definition.
Yeah.
That I just want to key in on. One of them is bravery.
That stuck out to me too.
Bravery is a word I talk to my kids about, and my understanding of bravery has evolved. I heard somebody say recently that bravery is not being afraid. It's doing it even though you are afraid.
That's right.
And I think when we talk about coachability, there's a lot of fear and a lot of vulnerability that's necessary to confront if we're going to be coachable.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's such a great point, right? People tend to think that, you know, being brave is something you're born with. And it's the opposite, right? It's continually learning that skill every single day. And it only gets harder the better you get. That's what I've realized. It doesn't get any easier. It just gets sometimes more complicated, actually. You kind of train that muscle, but the problems still are there, and you still have to face those fears pretty much every day.
I like what you said about it gets harder sometimes. It's not one of those things that necessarily gets easier. You can get more accustomed to doing things afraid, but the problem is, as you get older, your fears change. And as you become more successful, do you become more or less coachable?
Yeah, that's such a good point, right?
I find there's like a curve. There's like a coachability curve, right? Because you start off in your career and you know nothing, and you accept the fact that you know nothing.
Yeah.
And so you're coachable. You're open. You're emotionally open, right?
Yes.
And so you begin to grow in your career, but then a funny thing happens where you think you actually know what you're doing.
Right.
You start. Can be a problem for your coachability, right?
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's the biggest thing. Really, your ego, right? Gets in the way.
Yeah. So it's about maintaining that mental and emotional openness needed, necessary to consistently, can't even say this, man. This definition. How much did you pay for this definition? This has a lot of expensive words in it. Consistently observe its impact. So I think that's key, right? And so how do we maintain a coachability throughout our levels of success? And I say levels because there's levels to this thing, right? It's like not black and white. It's not binary. It's not successful and unsuccessful. There's levels to success.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how do we maintain our coachability, Danny, as we transcend these levels?
Yeah. From my own experience, I think it's the people that you work with. That's a big thing. You know, I don't think you can do coachability by yourself. You know, there's only so much you can study or research or even experience on your own, but you need someone else there to give you that feedback and be willing to coach you. And it's got to be someone that you respect and trust. So that's been my experience to maintain that and kind of continue on as you keep growing in your career.
That's spot on. Respect and trust is key, I think, in being coached. Let me ask you this. I mean, here we are. This is the Get Talent Podcast. This ain't the Get Coaching Podcast, Danny.
Right.
But why is hiring for coachability so important?
Got another study, of course.
Super studious. That's what I love about you. One of the many things.
There was a leadership IQ, it's called. They're an employee engagement survey form. They did a three.
Shout out to Leadership IQ, sponsors the show.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. And they did a 3-year study in the U.S. with 5,000 hiring managers, and they collectively hired more than 20,000 people over the 3-year period. They discovered that 46% of these newly hired employees failed within the first 18 months of starting a new role. And the top reason that these hiring managers believed or said that this was so is because they lacked the ability to be coachable. And that was the main reason.
Wow. 46% of new hires fail within 18 months. Dan, you can't be throwing stats around like that. People are going to want to change our guarantees.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'm not giving out 18-month guarantees here, Danny. Okay, right. But more importantly, though, what I'm pulling out of what you're saying is that the top reason is the employees lack the ability to be coachable. Man, that's profound. If we feel that that's the number one indicator after a year and a half of not being successful in a role, what do we do with that information?
I think there's a lot of things you have to be aware of within your organization. Let's talk about a new hire, right? You know, you can go back to the interview. Let's talk about some of the things that like happen as a result of a person not being coachable. I think that's, you know, a pretty good point, right? So why over these 18 months were these hiring managers saying this? And you know, it kind of goes to the attitudes of the employees within the organization. Really what happens is they can actually kind of rub off on the other employees. And I think as a hiring manager, a leader, you have to notice that. You have to notice the people on your team, because not only are they impacting themselves by not being coachable, it actually has an impact on the culture.
You know, you bring up a great point, right? Because if we're talking about coachability being characteristic of openness, a willingness to be vulnerable, a mindset of continuous improvement, if there's people in the circle who are not open, who are not vulnerable, who are not engaging in a mindset of continuous improvement, that can make other people in the circle feel like they shouldn't be doing that either.
Yeah.
Right? How can I be open if you're not being open?
Exactly.
How can I be vulnerable if you're not willing to be vulnerable?
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to put yourself out there. It's a two-way street, right? And it's so, and we really take for granted how much people influence us. Working, you're right, especially with what we do as recruiters, there's a lot of things you have to face with all the jobs that we recruit for. But recruiting in general, I think it exposes a lot of things about yourself that can be very difficult. We were just having a conversation about this before. And in order to succeed, I think as a leader and as an employee, coachability has to be just a major part, almost a requirement for your organization and team.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that too and how we hire for that. But I do find as a leader, if a team member is coachable, mm-hmm. that relationship flows like
that, yeah.
Right? If I have information, it's easily given, transferred, or received by that team, yeah. Right? But when the coachability is not where it needs to be, when the vulnerability and openness to receive is not there, there's like a wall between the water. It's like a dam.
Yeah.
Right? And my flow is stopping at the dam. And that dam is the lack of trust and a lack of openness, right?
Yeah.
And it's splashing against the walls, right?
Yeah.
But it's contained and it's creating a lot of tumult on my side as a leader, because I have things I want to communicate.
Yeah.
There's that wall there and I just keep banging into it, right? So I got all these ways over here. And on the other side of that is calmness, right? Because it's not flowing, you know?
Right, right.
But it's also not, it's not as high. The water level's not as high as it could be.
Right.
Because it needs the flow.
Mm.
Do you see the metaphor? Because I'm just going.
I see it.
I'm getting wild today.
I like it. So you're trying to get something done and, you know, with an employee and they're not being coachable. What's the negative impacts of that person, you know, not being coachable with you? Like what?
Well, it creates frustration in the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It can create frustration in the peer group,
mm-hmm.
who sees this happening.
Yep.
It can create discord.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in the unit. And then what it can do also is it can create a situation where people are working around this individual.
Yeah.
Because they're not up to speed.
Yes.
They're not clicking on all, because there's not an opening. We can't work through them. So we have to work around them.
Right.
Right. So everybody else has to do more. So it can it can foster resentment as well amongst the team. Right. And then this festers over time. Because, right, this festers over the 18 months. You said 46% of people who are let go are let go within 18 months. And the number one reason is coachability. So this stuff starts to fester and it's not immediately resolved.
And that's true, right? It's not immediately resolved and it's a progression, right? People like learn to adapt around that person. But on the flip side, if that person's coachable, how much of a difference is that? If everyone on your team is coachable, things move faster. People are, like you said, it's smooth. People are having fun. You know, people are embracing it, you know?
Yeah, you become so much more innovative.
Yes.
Right? Because in order to innovate, you have to share ideas.
Mm-hmm.
In order to share ideas, there has to be openness. There has to be trust. Because ideas suck at first. Like, fresh ideas are not well thought through. They're not tested. They lack supporting data. They're just ideas. They're just unctions. They're just spitballing, right?
Right.
And so you have to have a climate of acceptance and inclusivity of ideas in order to have that innovation happen. So when you have it and everyone's open and everyone's vulnerable and everyone realizes, hey, you know, these ideas aren't going to be great in the beginning, but we're just going to, you know, we're going to see if there's anything there, right? You can be super innovative. Also, change can happen very quickly. Change can happen very quickly. Process improvement can happen extraordinarily quickly where there's coachability. Mm-hmm. Because if it's like, oh, hey, we're going to, you know, we got this piece of information over here from this person who had typically a failure moment. That's where we get the most information from, right?
Right.
So information comes from typically failures, right? Minor failures. Could be minor, could be, you know, but
yeah.
We use that word a lot openly, right? So a minor failure moment, right? Now, because this person's open, they're going to share that. They're not going to hide it. So now they shared it with the group. Now we as a group can learn from it. And now we can implement a new process. And now as a leader, I can now roll this process down.
Mm.
Or even in an optimal situation, it can roll laterally throughout the organization without my involvement even,
right?
Because then you have coachability not only from a leader to a subordinate team member,
right?
But now you have coachability from laterally on the team.
Mm.
And that's beautiful too.
Yeah.
Right? When the team is coaching themselves.
Yes.
That is really beautiful.
Yeah. That's so true. I think we've honestly done a really good job of that at Glomo. I gotta say, that's like,
I think you're right.
One of our biggest strengths that really, you know, I've changed a lot since joining the company, and so has everyone else, I think, because you create this environment of people kind of owning the things that they do, and not only owning that, but almost like having a positive way of looking at it instead of like, okay, good. That's like you said, that's new information. And that's, and like you said, we just got better. I love, you know, when you told me that, right? And it changed everything for me, because there's really is no mistake if you're coachable. You're only getting better.
Yeah, let's highlight what you just said there, right? So for people listening out there, one of the keys to creating a coachable environment is celebrating failure. Not demonizing it. One of the great ways to do that is to reframe it and say, we just got better. So if something happens that we didn't want to happen, we say, oh, we just got better. Now we learned from that. We got new information, right?
Yeah.
And as such, we don't want to just keep that to ourselves and get better as an individual. We want to get better as a team, right? So we it's really great if we can just get better as a team. So leaders out there who are hearing this, I want y'all to remember this. We just got better.
Yeah. It's really magical.
It's a magical reframe.
It really is. And the cool thing about it is not only are you learning, but it encourages you to keep taking risks. And I think what happens is sometimes you're in an organization and you take that risk. You know, so a lot of us have been in this. Most of us have been in this situation. You take that risk, you mess up, and your boss gets angry at you. And the thing you do is, you actually get defensive instead of being coachable, right? So it's on that leader to kind of give you that mindset, and then you don't try again. But on our approach, it's like, okay, you messed up, but don't stop trying. Just keep going. Take the risks, you know?
Yeah.
It's very, very big.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can fixate, to your point, on minimizing their mistakes instead of, and they're playing, they're playing and trying to solve for the downside effects when they need to be playing and trying to solve for the upside.
Yes.
Right? Because you show me a person that doesn't make mistakes, and that's a person that doesn't take risks.
Yeah.
Right? You show me a person who hasn't failed, and I'll show you a person who hasn't tried and Right? So we want to be risk-taking. We want to be trying and endeavoring to be great. And it's impossible to endeavor to be great while also managing the minor bumps along the way. You know, you can't be focused on the bumps along the way if you're endeavoring to be great.
Yeah. The bravery is moving forward and doing it again, right? That's the bravery.
Yes. You know? Doing it again and doing it, frankly, publicly in a way that can be seen by others, knowing that you're not doing it perfectly.
Exactly.
Knowing that your mistakes are obvious.
Yeah, right.
Right. And still doing it. I mean, that's the bravery.
Yeah. And you know what? Leaders can see that. Like, they pick up on that right away, right? You can see that type of person. And it almost is like, you know, we've even seen with the candidates that we place, sometimes that is way more important than the skill that they bring to the table, because they can learn that skill. If someone has a skill and they're not coachable, it could be kind of useless. It could actually be worse for your business.
If someone's coachable, they can learn skills quickly because knowledge is transferred rapidly.
Yes.
Right? And their upside is tremendous.
Yeah.
I think coachability might be the number one. I think it might be the number one trait that I hire for.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And yeah, it's really interesting. And it's
so what, I'm sorry, go ahead, Danny.
No, it's interesting what you're saying, because I was just going to bring it back to like hiring for coachability.
Right.
So,
that's what I was saying.
Yeah. So it's figuring out, like, how do we do that? Like, how does us as recruiters, how do we find candidates that have coachability, that have this trait, and how do hiring managers see that as they're interviewing people throughout this process? Seems like a very hard thing, right? To know on an interview, right?
So we've identified with that Forbes study that 46% of people leave after 18 months. And the number one reason that the manager says they were exited was coachability. I've also told you as a CEO, the number one trait I like to hire for is coachability. So now, to Danny's point, how do you hire for coachability? How do you actually suss that out in the interview process? And I'll tell you something I heard from somebody that I thought was just absolutely brilliant. He said, you know how we ask, here's a standard interview question, right? How have you dealt with a situation with a difficult customer? Right?
Yeah.
And like, that's a typical type of interview question, right? And instead of saying it that way, his hiring manager said to me, he said, I'm going to give you a situation, a difficult situation. I would like you to write me an email to that customer resolving the situation. So not only is he understanding the quality of their thought and their ability to compose and de-escalate and all the things he wants to test for. But then when he gets the response from them in writing, he then corrects it.
Mm.
He says, oh, here I would have said this, here I would have said this. This is really good. Maybe we try to add this point in here or here. I might rephrase this piece because it came off a little bit negative. What if we tried this? And he gives that feedback to the candidate. And now the candidate, what does the candidate do with that feedback?
How do they respond, right?
Are they defensive? Are they appreciative? Are they yes and? Oh, that's good. And I might even do this. What do you think about that? And then asking for more feedback.
Right.
I mean, that's ideal, right?
Right.
Because you can respond like three ways, right? You say, no, I think it's good. Or I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
You can say, oh, okay. Thank you very much. Or you can say, oh, I like what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
What if we try to do this? Would you think that would work too or no? I love number three because they're showing a enthusiasm for self-improvement. They're saying, yeah, yes, and, you know, like, give me more knowledge. I want to be even better. Now I'm synthesizing what you're telling me with an open mind and a mindset of constant improvement. And now I'm adding to your feedback and I'm asking you, how does that sound?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that to me is
great. I love that. That's such a simple way of doing it. And you probably learn everything about that person as it relates. And I think the next step is not only them taking the feedback on, but them doing something about it. So, you know, I was reading that, you know, a lot of people think they're coachable because they listen to things and they can be coached. But then when it comes down to the bravery part that we talked about, actually taking that information and then going back and being vulnerable to that, putting yourself out there, that's the coachability part, you know? So I think that's a big differentiator. So you kind of do that exercise and see what they do to respond to that, you know?
Yes.
Do they act on it?
So that work study right there, and then correcting the work study, ask them to revise it with the coaching.
Mm.
See how much they retained. To your point, people can say they listened, but they didn't actually.
Exactly. So
I love that. And, you know, it's something we started doing, actually. We hired somebody recently in a new type of role. And we said, hey, you know, can you give us this piece of work? You know, it's basic, mm-hmm. right? It's not right. really about the work.
Right.
You know? And then let's talk about it. And so, anyway, yeah, I love that idea. I was blown away.
That was great.
Concept.
That's great. Another thing I've noticed with coachable people and picking up on hiring is when you interview them, it's like a basic thing people talk about, right? And we kind of joke about this, is like people that complain about their old bosses on an interview or their old companies. And we say you should never do that, but we said we always do that. So so maybe we're not as coachable as we thought, but...
Yeah.
The point
or maybe
is,
we're not coachable with those people, right? We talk
right.
about that too.
Ooh.
Maybe you didn't have that relationship
That's
with that boss.
The leader, yeah. That right. leader's
you didn't have the trust, you know, with that person.
Yeah, it's a great point, right? So yeah, and I think there's definitely truth to that. Like when I'm interviewing candidates, I do listen if they blame other people for things that have not worked out. I really pay attention to that because it's funny. You said we hire for coachability. I think I recruit for coachability because I know that person's going to, I never thought of it this way, but intuitively that person is going to be the most successful because they're willing to hold themselves accountable. If things go wrong, they're going to take responsibility for it and make it better. And not only that, even if they're not doing good at the job, you'll earn the respect of your team and your leadership if you're being coachable, even if you're not getting the results right away, because they know that you're going to get there and you're committed
yes.
to doing that. So
yes,
it's a big thing to me. You know,
I love that, right? Taking ownership.
Yeah.
Taking exactly. ownership of what's happened in the past.
Yeah.
Talking about what you could have done better. Right.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we focus on the externalities, things that happen to us, mm-hmm. and we focus less on the internalities and things we could do about it.
Exactly. Because that's harder. It's much harder to do.
Yeah. I think another thing you brought up that I thought was really interesting is like talking about, you know, ask them who's had an influence on their life. Ask yeah. them who professionally has mentored them.
Yeah.
You know, coachable people will talk a lot about mentorship
yeah.
and how important it is, the mentors yeah. and what impact the mentors have had on their relationship. Whereas people who aren't as coachable think that they're self-made.
Yes. They don't. That's
one of my
so
biggest
true.
Pet peeves is talking to people who deny the impact of others on their life.
Yes. That's not a coachable person right there.
No. No.
No.
And it's okay if you're an entrepreneur and you just want to say, oh, yeah, I started my own business and I made, you know, was all this,
yeah.
you know, made all this money and did all these things, was super successful on my own and whatever. And you just want to live that narrative. I mean, okay, I
yeah.
guess.
It's yeah.
your life. It's your
sure.
story. You write it how you want to write it.
Yeah.
But I know as a person, I mean, I'm an entrepreneur too, and that's not my story. You know, I have a laundry list of people who have influenced my life. In fact, I consider myself a fairly intelligent person, and every single thing that I know, I could probably yeah. attribute back to a person I learned it from.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and I think that people who tell their story that way, to me, that signifies coachability.
This is so great, because like as you're saying this to me, it's even helping me when speaking with candidates. It's like identifying someone who's secure and confident, but not full of themselves. So it's kind of like a balance of like, are you confident and secure enough to put yourself out there, make mistakes, keep learning, take information from pretty much anybody, you know, not looking down on people, but, you know, at the same time, you know, you want to believe in yourself, right? Like you said, you feel that anything you can do, you'll do it well and you're capable. But at the same time, you also have to not believe in yourself too much almost. Like there's kind of like, you know, kind of bringing yourself down to reality a little bit. You know, there's like that yeah. balance. You know?
Yeah. Yes. And another thing I've observed, kind of to your point about the way that we speak about people we worked with in the past, is a coachable person, if something is done, if they did something incorrectly,
yeah,
a coachable person will say, oh, how could I have done it better? Oh, what should I have done? A person who's less coachable might say, oh, well, they told me to do it that way.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so not
that's the sign right there. That's a red flag.
Oh, well, so-and-so told. Because there's a difference between coachability and being someone who takes delegation well.
Mm.
Because delegation is a transactional process. It's like, hey, I need you to do A, I need you to do B,
yeah.
I need you to do C.
Did yeah.
you do A, B, and C?
Yeah.
Versus, I'm going to give you some advice that will apply to the way you do A, B, and C, and hopefully make you better at doing D, E, F, and G as well
yeah.
in your life.
Mm.
So there's coaching is different from delegating, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It seems simple, but it's actually more complicated as a leader to do, right? Because you're dealing with different people. I never realized actually how difficult it is to not only be coachable, but to coach somebody as well. Yes. Because you have to be coachable yourself if you're a coach, right? So it goes both ways.
It does. Because if that person's going to trust you.
Yeah.
One of the best ways as a coach to gain trust is to talk about how you were in their shoes.
Right. Yes.
Or yesterday. Like I tell people this all the time. Like, listen, I'm going to tell you something I've observed. But the only reason I pick up on it so well is because I do it all the time myself.
That's so great. That's such a great thing to say to your employee, to show that vulnerability like we're talking about. That right there could make such a difference with a person. Even I'm feeling it the way you just said that. You know, it's taking this pressure off and it's empowering, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And now guess what? You know what? We're in this together. Because I'm going through it myself.
Yes.
Right?
We're figuring it out.
We have this in common. We're both on the same team here trying to figure out how to do this part of our life better.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's not like there's this hierarchy or this like you're bad. Like it's like no, like we both have this thing in us that we're doing and we need to get better at it, you know.
Right. So right. Yeah. You might be at a different level, but it's still we're all trying to get better no matter where that is.
And some
right?
some days you're at a different level and some days you're not at a different level.
Right.
Like, cuz it's not like I'm good or I'm bad or I'm skilled at this or not. Like some like you know, am I a good shooter if I miss a shot? I mean, I missed a shot yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know what I mean? Like basketball players, they get coached every single day, even at the highest level.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jordan, I mean, he was coached throughout his whole career, you know, and still missed, you know, more threes than he made, you know?
Right.
So anyway, yeah, coachability coaching is crazy. I mean, when I started my business, you know, I think I'm up to like three different coaches right now in my business. It's a lot of money, dude. It's a lot of time. Like, cheap, honestly, right? Like my coaches will hit me up. They'll be like, Ben, you missed the session. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, I mean, like, you know, I value your coaching, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Cause the other thing that happens, and this is kind of goes back to what I said before, like there's a curve to it. Right. Because what happened is you become successful, but success can become your enemy in your own development.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is sometimes we get successful and we stop doing the things that made us successful.
You lose the edge a little, right? You lose that edge.
And that's why people hit a level of success and they don't break through to the next level.
Then that's what happens. So common, right? That's most people, you're saying.
They can't sustain their own development.
That's the trick. It's to keep going, right? Not just getting to that place and stopping that you wanted to get to, right? It's like, where else can I go?
Something I struggle with, you know? Because when you get to a level, now all of a sudden, you have to do new things to get to the next level while maintaining or making sure a lot of the things you did still get done. So that means maybe delegating. That means maybe hiring people. That means maybe transferring those skills and coaching other people to be good at things that used to be
good
at.
Yes.
So it's key. It's key from hiring. It's also key from developing and growing yourself as a leader.
Yeah. Such a good point. Yeah. This is an amazing topic. Do you have any, you know, last kind of words of advice to let's say clients or hiring managers out there? You know, I consider you to be really, to me, the best coach in Glomo. I see that as your, you know, such a big strength and you've coached me so much and you know, changed a lot. So what advice can you give to clients out there that are looking to do the same thing?
You know, I would say to hiring manager, I didn't feel like I was a very good coach for a big chunk of my career. So it's really an honor to hear you say that you feel like I'm a good coach, because I also know the power of a good coach. I've had so many in my life. It wasn't something I felt like I was very good at for a long time because I didn't really understand how to care about people and that I was allowed to care about people and that it was not only allowable, but it was required if I was going to make the kind of connections that I wanted to make with people. And so you know, this isn't as much tactical perhaps as we may like for these podcasts, but I would tell people out there who want to be a good coach that they really have to care about the people they're working with. They have to find purpose in that work. The good news is it's easy to do. It's easy to care about other people. Human beings were wired this way, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to find purpose in other people's development, because developing other people is our own development as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would ask people to reframe their approach maybe into just wanting to care about people first and foremost, more so even than themselves and their own development. I think sometimes as leaders, we can fall into a trap of doing what's best for us or best for the business. We have to do what's best for people. Otherwise, we're not going to earn the trust required to have the relationship that's deep.
That's great advice. It is, right? It's like, just look at, are you being, you know, or what are you doing for other people? You taught me a lot about generosity, right? So being generous with other people, there's a vulnerability in that. And it kind of forces you in a way to examine yourself and be coachable and kind of be vulnerable with other people. So it really is all connected.
Yeah.
Really all connected.
Yeah. This is a great topic, Danny. I really appreciate you bringing this topic up.
Yeah.
I think this is something that people need to hear. It may not be what they expected to hear when they tuned in today, but I feel like it's something that everybody, no matter what side of the desk you're on, needs to hear.
Yes. We got to do that once in a while, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Sometimes we got to give people what they need. Not always what they think they want, you know?
Yeah.
But this is awesome. Hey, everybody, make sure you follow the Get Talent Podcast anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Please hit that subscribe button. Leave us a review if you like this. If you didn't like it, hit me up and let me know why. Also, if you have a topic, let me know what you want to hear us talk about. We're 27 episodes in and going strong. Much props to Danny. Much props to Jana and the good people that produce this show as well. I have a lot of fun doing this with you, Danny, every week.
Too. This is awesome.
Take care, everybody. We'll talk
Take
to you
care. Later.
Get Talent Podcast.